Hey, fellow Tauri, and welcome to another episode of Open the Iris on the Infinite Potato Alliance Network. I'm Ro, and with me as always is Rick. What's going on, Rick? How you doing?
I feel like a target, but otherwise I'm fine.
Target, huh? Otherwise, I'm... Well, ladies and gents, of course, we're back. Not just ladies and gents, all the peoples. The X, Ys, and the Zs, theys, them, Zs, all that stuff. But we're talking about Season 5, Episode 13, Proving Ground.
Easy for you to say.
This was the first episode that re-aired after 9/11. Air date of March 8th, 2002. Written by Ron Wilkerson and directed by Andy Makita, with a score of the IMDb's of a 7.7, which is pretty actually average, which is around the same scores for most of the episodes.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that one.
Yeah, it's, I mean, because I think the lowest I think I've seen, let me see, 7.6, no, 7.2, Red Sky, no, 6.9, Rite of Passage. That was... Okay, let me see other one.
Wait, Emancipation wasn't the low point?
No, I'm talking about season five.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, anyways, this is a four pager, guys. I gotta get ready, I gotta mentally prepare myself for this. Let me put on some lip balm, get ready, talk a lot. Okay, so we open with Colonel Jack O'Neill and Teal'c leading a group of four young Stargate Command recruits, Lieutenant Kevin Elliott, leader boy. Just FYI, I pretty much kind of used the wiki and then like add a few things here and there because there's a couple scenes left over. So yeah, but you're gonna kind of get a gist of that. I added it some row stuff to it, so it's all good. But I'm gonna be referring to these people as the following as their alternate names. So just FYI. So Lieutenant Kevin Elliott, leader boy. Lieutenant Jennifer Haley, season 4, episode 19. We're gonna refer to as Prodigy because that's where she was previously from. And Lieutenant Carl Grogan, that's other guy. And then Lieutenant Satterfield, Boomer, from Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
And they lead all four of them through a small wooded area. And, you know, this is the recruit training program. And also means, you know, and also a means of preparing them for the rigors of off-world missions by having them participate in various mission-like scenarios. As Jack and Teal'c head to an abandoned warehouse, Jack tells the recruits that two of his team members, you know, Carter and Jackson, are missing and having been kidnapped by the Goa'uld. Jack and Teal'c head into the warehouse, and the recruits, commanded by Lieutenant Leader Guy, or Leader Boy, rush in a few moments after O'Neill calls for help, when they hear gunfire despite Elliott hesitating over the situation. The recruits storm into the warehouse, where they find O'Neill and Teal'c unconscious on the floor, and Sam and Daniel pointing weapons at each other, with Sam hovering over Jackson, stating that she's a Tok'ra and Daniel is gold. And I think she's using a Tok'ra voice, I forget.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel claims that Sam is gold, advising Elliott leader boy to listen to Sam's voice. Grogan, other guy, then shoots Carter, which in turn draws leader boy's anger, and the group of recruits begin bickering among themselves about Grogan shooting her, and Grogan insisting that he did the right thing and that two shots from a Zat will kill someone. The argument comes to a halt when Daniel tells recruits that may be true, but they're wrong on about one thing before stating in a gold voice that Sam was actually telling the truth all along, that she was a Tok'ra and Daniel himself is a Goa'uld. Without waiting for a response, and as the four recruits stand there, Daniel uses a gun to stun all four of them. Pew, pew, pew. Seconds later, the training exercise ends, and as everyone recovers, O'Neill chastises the team and dismisses them to regroup in 20 for a briefing. The recruits leave looking like they're in their feelings, because they were. Jackson, always being a nice guy, asks if O'Neill was being too hard on them, and O'Neill's like, no. And walks away, puts on his glasses, roll opening credits. Okay. That was just pre-credits, y'all. God
damn it. You got this. You're doing great, though.
I know. It's just a lot to say. And I didn't proofread this at all. I mean, whatever. At the briefing, O'Neill gave leader boy Elliott a what for, and for, like, you know, shoot him out, and for his team failing, pointing out all their flaws individually. Boomer didn't believe Jackson was a ghoul because he was cute, as Prodigy pointed out in Pettiness. Then for some reason, Carter chastises them for letting their personal feelings get in the way when we've had four seasons of SG-1 doing the same exact thing. Okay, sure, Jan. Sure, okay. On to Prodigy. Carter asks her why she failed, and she responds correctly. I was waiting for Leader Boy to give the orders to pretty much shoot them both and assess the situation later. O'Neill reaffirms her correct response, but then Leader Boy asks how O'Neill and Jackson were taken out since they were found unconscious after the radio call. And you know them being hardcore, you know, just, and he doesn't buy it because O'Neill and Teal'c are like hardcore, like one's a prime, and you know, O'Neill, he's been special ops, and you know, like, and there would be no way for them to have been taken so easily, so by surprise, and it would have been, and it wouldn't have been possible for them for the call for backup, and then to where pretty much Leader Boy pretty much negates actual training scenario they just went through and the reason why they hesitated, and states that it was not a fair test. O'Neill then snaps back, telling Leader Boy he's overthinking, and pointed that when it comes to these situations, you need to think fast and only had one more day of training with them, and they'll be assigned to an SG team or not, and dismisses them. Carter then points out Leader Boy was right on about the scenario, and O'Neill's like, we'll fix it next time, and then, you know, he walks away. So, you know, as O'Neill's walking away, Leader Boy catches up with O'Neill to apologize for such attitude and insolence, but O'Neill responds, I like attitude, but not brown nose kiss asses. So Leader Boy tries to interject, but O'Neill puts a halt to that and is like, look, you're a good leader. They wouldn't have sent you if you weren't, but not everyone's cut out for this. But Leader Boy is like, I was born for this. O'Neill's like, okay, and he goes away. The next scene, the recruits are on a break. Leader Boy Elliot is in his feelings about his encounter with O'Neill, like, you know, he don't like me. And other guy Grogan jokingly comments that maybe O'Neill isn't on their side, or he just doesn't like Leader Boy, you know, or really anybody. Prodigy Girl then interjects saying, you know, he's wrong. O'Neill is ride or die, because, again, season 4, episode 19, Prodigy. And she's happy that O'Neill is a commanding officer because for these recruits, as each SG team, they rotate training new recruits, and basically it's the CO that chooses who pass or fail. And so, you know, Prodigy Haley also emphasizes that she wants to be chosen by the best, because that's right, she's a ride or die for O'Neill. But yeah, Leader Boy and Prodigy go back and forth, and pretty much Prodigy calls out Leader Boy on his lack of commitment, belief to be part of the SG program, and goes for a run with Boomer and other guy joining, leaving Sour Pants Leader Boy all by his lonesome. Later, in the SGC mess hall, Carter talks to O'Neill about Leader Boy Elliot, and you know, Jack recognizes that Lieutenant Prodigy is brilliant, but thinks that the rest of the team doesn't hold great promise for the future of SGC. Leader Elliot is a fine Air Force Academy graduate, but being an SGC takes an extra something. Jack believes that Elliot thinks too much, and that makes him indecisive. Carter then argues that it shows that Leader Boy is intelligent and understands the whole point of the training program and really looks up to O'Neill, and still argues Leader Boy was right about this the previous training situation. O'Neill responds in such ways like an old man complaining about recruits when they are all, in fact, very good candidates. Carter then sees she's too grumpy and leaves. The next day, back at the training facility, Colonel O'Neill leads the recruits into another simulation. They are to infiltrate a building believed to house a valuable piece of Ghoul technology. They find the device, but it's booby-trapped. After a moment of indecision, Elliot orders his team out, and the device explodes. But one of his men, other guy, Grogan, doesn't make it out. Jack condemns Elliot for leaving a man behind, stating that leaving someone behind is something Jack himself will not tolerate under any circumstance, and declares the exercise to be another failure. And as a result, Leader Boy already considers himself a washout for leaving one of his team behind during a simulated explosion. O'Neill then receives a phone call and walks away, but still within a bit of earshot of the recruits. They realize that the phone call is from Carter, warning O'Neill about a situation at Sierra Gulf Charlie, which is, you know, SGC, and Leader Boy, and they figure that out. O'Neill then tells the recruits to go back to the barracks, but Leader Boy refuses. Then two Humvees drive up, and some other guys in uniform, another general or colonel, come out. And with his back to the Humvees, O'Neill pulls out his pistol and cocks it. He then tells the recruits to wait as he walks away to go talk to those guys. The team recruits realize that this is a possible alien incursion at SGC from what they overheard O'Neill saying on the phone. As they watch O'Neill talk to the other people, Leaderboy tells the team to put their weapons into max stun. Then O'Neill pulls out his gun and goes, pap, 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 and then somehow he gets shot in the lower right quadrant of his abdomen. The trainees offer their help, stating that this is that they're all that's available, but O'Neill's angry. He's like, I don't need your help. I was about to fail all y'all. So Leaderboy interjects that he's hurt, they need their help, and that that's all they got. O'Neill reluctantly allows it and head back to Stargate Command. Infiltrating Stargate Command, they deduce to use armory to stock up on stun weapons and back up live ammunition. Woo! Handguns to, like, where O'Neill expressly tells them just in case, as the instructions are to stun any Gwol-controlled Stargate Command faculty. They also need to find Carter, as she was the one that warned O'Neill. They then overhear a conversation with Tilk talking to Jackson, stating that General Hammond is captured and awaiting to be conformed, and that they're still trying to locate Carter, who will be put to death. O'Neill and the recruits head for Carter's lab. At Carter's lab, they have access to several security cameras throughout SGC to see what's going on. The team sees that the gate is currently activated for some reason, they don't know why, and there's security everywhere, and Daniel Jackson is seen in General Hammond's office, then going into the briefing room, interacting with some weird pulsating orb type thing on the desk, and then Boomer says he looks possessed. And then they basically have a plan to have the cadet shut off the gate and to find more intel on the weird device. Jack wants to go along, but of course is badly injured, and Elliot basically tells Jack to stay behind, that he needs to go out, you know, he's not good if he's dead. So, but yeah, with that, the recruits depart with Elliot and Haley taking the upper level to go to the embarkation room, and Grogan and Satterfield going to Daniel's lab. However, Leader Boy and Prodigy are outside the embarkation room. O'Neill kind of recalls them, ordering them fall back to where he is, but they actually get into a firefight to where Prodigy ends up having to use her pistol with live ammunition, killing a fellow soldier that was overtaken by a Gwol. In shock, Prodigy tries to explain herself, but Leader Boy tells her she had to do what she had to do and that they need to move the bodies so they don't get discovered, having the mission be a priority. But, you know, they're called back to the embarkation room, and, you know, has Leader Boy wondering. Meanwhile, Boomer and another guy are in Daniel's lab looking for... You can tell which ones I added, guys. Daniel's computer... looking on Daniel's computer, they come to the conclusion that the entire SGC, including the rest of SG-1, appears to be under some sort of gold mind control last seen on the planet Argos, identified as P3X8596, you know, the one where O'Neill got really, really super old, season 1, episode 9, Brief Candle. And it appears that the leader is none other than Dr. Daniel Jackson. Back at Carter's lab, yeah, I know, right? Surprise. So back at Carter's lab, recruits regroup and discover a blood sample that nanobots, while Jack is less than impressed with the memory of being on Argos, stating that he was 100 years old and the memory is the first thing to go. After forming the final plan of closing the Stargate and removing the orb, the recruits depart once again. Once they left, we see Jack call someone and tells them that they're on their way. Like, what? But really, we knew. In the hall, the recruits approach, finding Carter around a corner. They search her and deem her she's fine, although when they head into the lab, they find Jack cutting off the restraints of a captured soldier, a quote-unquote captured soldier that's supposed to be unconscious, but it's standing nonchalantly like, nothing's happening, like, doo-doo-doo. Recruits look puzzled, and you can see Carter slowly closing her eyes, giving away to the viewer about how the plan done got foobarred. So you can honestly see it, guys. I promise you, because, like, on my second viewing, I was like, that's hilarious. Okay, so then Leader Boy asks O'Neill, what are you doing? And then Jack's like, he responds, I'm ready to interrogate the guard. And the guard is just still standing there, unrestrained, looking dumb as hell. And Elliot says, no, you weren't. And then shoots the guard and is immediately, you know, and the guard is unconscious. Carter then draws Satterfield's gun, revealing that she believes Jack has been compromised. Elliot then shoots Jack and tells Carter that thanks to the blood sample, they figured out Carter's immune to any sort of Gwol nanotechnology, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. The recruits then head back into the hall and split up once again and shut down the Stargate as Carter stays back to quote-unquote find a cure. The recruits leave, and Carter turns around, looks at O'Neill unconscious, and says, whoops! The recruits are then seen doing various procedures of slowly infiltrating SGC. You know, we need to take up some screen time. Remind me to add a fun fact about the screen time. Hold on, I gotta take a quick drink.
Okay.
Oh, delicious. Okay. Okay. So back at the lab, Jack, who has recovered, is pissed at the fact that Carter told the recruits that he'd been compromised. Carter was like, they didn't go down the proper corridor as instructed. Carter assures him otherwise and informs him that the Pentagon staff are monitoring the situation. So then we go to a security room where we see Major General Hammond and then Brigadier General Michael Kerrigan from, I think he was from the Prodigy episode as well. And they're watching all this pan out on CCTV. And of course we realize, and that's what we know, you should have realized by then, if not by now, that the supposed foothold situation was, you know, just still part of the training exercises. And then they go betting on whether or not the recruits will work out. And then you also continue talking about the current state of affairs of the SU program and expanding and things like that. That was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. We then have O'Neill and Carter enter the room, and O'Neill explains that he thinks Elliot knows it's a test. And, you know, this is because when O'Neill called the time to come back to him, to Carter's lab, this was because O'Neill couldn't let them go to the embarkation room as SG-3 had an unscheduled arrival due to heavy fire from Gold. Regardless, O'Neill states that if Elliot knows his exercise, he isn't showing it. The recruits then launch their attack on Daniel and Tilk and other soldiers. Lots of pew-pewing. Boomer takes out Jackson and apologizes. Tilk is taken down as well. And other boy Gorgon is injured. Boomer rigs the supposedly mind-controlling orb device with a C4 explosive, then goes back to General Hammond's office to pull Jackson out of harm's way of the explosive because she's thirsty for Dr. Jackson and his archaeologist dad bod. When the thing doesn't explode, it's basically clay and not C4. SG-1 reveals all that the whole thing was a very elaborate ploy set up by them and Hammond and all the SGC personnel, and that the real bullets were in fact blank ones, as they needed to see how the recruits would react in a real life situation. If they were to encounter something, you know, similarly off world or whatever, they congratulate the lieutenants as they did very well. Jackson thanks Boomer for the rescue, and she blushes. Then an alarm goes off as they're trying to figure out where Haley is. Haley, however, is still in the embarkation room trying to finish her part of the mission. Suddenly, the Stargate engages and opens a wormhole that turns out to be releasing deadly radiation. Haley tries to manually override the iris, but is electrocuted in the process and passes out. Within seconds, Haley is basically declared dead based upon the amount of radiation coming through the Stargate. Hammond orders a full evacuation as they go back to the monitoring room where the other Brigadier General is. As recruits leave, Elliot ignores Hammond's order to evacuate and runs into the room anyways to attempt to rescue his fallen teammate. Elliot closes the Stargate and calls for medical as Haley is still showing a pulse. She turns out not only to be fine, but also part of the last training exercise. And she was like, yay, you did it. Congratulates the cadets again. All four members are told that they have a bright future at SGC with Hammond. And he tells Elliot that he's going to be the first one to be assigned. And that's going to be to SG-17 mm-hmm. under Major Mansfield. And, you know, and then O'Neill's like, Mansfield's a hard ass. Excuse me. Okay, so O'Neill then tells Elliot good job and asks him if he knew it was a test when he shot him. O'Neill was like, well, maybe he suspected. And he was like, you really think the test is over now? They walk up and we see the red light and the normal SGC alert sirens. Roll credits.
Oh, dang. Well done. Take a drink. You've earned it. This was a busy episode.
It was.
But it was fun. There wasn't a whole lot of padding in this.
That's the one thing I was going to say, that one of the fun facts about this is they needed more time. There wasn't enough screen time. And they actually had to add that whole cafeteria scene with Carter and O'Neill mm-hmm. to take up more screen time, apparently. But yeah, I mean, it's a standard episode. And I think that's fine. That's a standard episode. I don't think there's necessarily lots of twists and turns because, you kind of knew. You just knew.
Yeah.
And
well, I like that they didn't they didn't try to draw it out too long to pretend that it was real. They kind of tipped their hand to the audience pretty early on, which was, I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't need, like, yeah, we know it's mostly supposed to be suspenseful. I think one of the best things about this episode was the reveal of extra things of the universe that was currently not known. SG-17. How many teams are there? Has there been I don't remember any previous episodes mentioning how, I mean, I remember there's like SG-12.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that this was the first mention of SG-17.
That's a lot. Like, there has to be more than, at least more than 20. Like, you just don't get weird numbers like that. And, you know, that's cool. Like, ooh, I mean, like, it just opens the universe more. And I would imagine that as a fan, like, you know, when you're first watching this, you're just like, oh my God, they can do so much more with this. This is great. And they do actually do it to an extent. And, like, that's a cool, I mean, that would be honestly a cool feeling to feel if I was, like, you know, watching it as it was coming out. And then, you know, you have also the scene with General Hammond and Brigadier General, that guy, mm-hmm. and them talking about the future of the training and how we were talking about how it kind of inconvenienced the staff of the command for the training. And, you know, but like Hammond's like, oh, everyone likes to participate, you know, and help out. But, you know, it makes sense, like, you know, because of the fact that there was an emergency arrival from SG-3, it almost, you know, messed up the training thing. So, mm-hmm. And like how Hammond was talking about, he wants to go, he was like, you know, putting in a budget proposal that will essentially lead to more training actual training facilities off world, as well as there's training for not just land, but space, because of the fact that we are also, threats are, you know, through the gate as well as in space. So like you have a flying program and you have just like, I mean, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I thought that was all awesome. And I was just like, wow, like, yay, thank you for telling me more things about the universe that are different than, you know. So, yeah, I think that's the best take to take from this episode. So I don't.
Oh, yeah. And most of what they mention this isn't one of those ones where they mention stuff and then we never hear from it again.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I know Elliot comes back in a couple more episodes in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So that's understandable. But we don't see Boomer because, of course,
she doesn't come back.
But we do see, I think, Gorgon once too.
Yeah, Gorgon comes back.
But this is the last we see of Prodigy, of Haley.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I didn't even realize I was doing this. I don't know if I did this when we did Prodigy. Mm-hmm. But I keep thinking of her. I keep mixing her name up in my mind with the name Henry, mm-hmm. because when I was in the Air Force, there was a young lady in my training squadron in tech mm-hmm. school named Henry. Her last name was Henry. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure if I haven't seen her in, you know, 22 years. So, but the actor who plays Haley and Airman Henry are not dissimilar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure if I could put them side by side, they probably don't look anything alike,
mm-hmm,
but at least in my memory, they are, you know, they could be cousins or something.
That's cool.
And so I keep conflating Henry with Haley, because the name is also very similar.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
It was funny when I first watched this episode for our show, and it started and I saw her and I was like, wait a minute. Is this the right episode? Because, you know, sometimes Netflix will get things in the wrong mm-hmm. order. And I was like, wait a minute, we've seen her before. Is this And then finally they mention it and they're like, oh, yeah, I knew Jack back then. And, oh, OK, it's a sequel. All right, cool.
mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Like in regards to that, I know, I just like. It was just fun to see. And I'm going to go ahead and say my favorite quote first, because I had to, like, I'm pretty sure it might be yours too, but I just want to say, because, like, I wrote up a thing about it, so, yeah.
Okay.
So, it's a scene where Daniel and Tilk are in Hammond's office, and they're waiting for the recruits to come get them. And Daniel's all comfy, loving General Hammond's fancy leather chair, enjoying that the training scenario because he's basically doing nothing. And Tilk is just staring through this hourglass for some reason.
Yeah.
And so then we get a call on the red phone. Ring, ring, ring. Daniel answers, hello. And then change scene. to where you see O'Neill on the other line of the red phone, his face half in the dark, half in the light, giving the stare of Anthony Hopkins as he's in the glass entrance cell of playing Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs, telling Jodie Foster Clarice about how he had his liver with a nice bottle of Chianti and fava beans. And O'Neill says, "Have fun, Daniel." And Daniel goes, "You did tell them to take me prisoner this time and not shoot me, right?" Right? O'Neill then hangs up. O'Neill's like, "Hello, hello," and you hear gunshots.
This, you know, this was such a fun episode. When I was watching it, I hadn't really looked at air dates or anything like that, so I was just like, "This is weird that they're putting two kind of silly episodes back to back." And then I realized that this was the first one to come. This was the first one after 9/11, and after a 6 month break. So it made perfect sense to come back with a lighthearted episode that's just silly fun, and you know, nobody gets dead for real, and it's all just goof. I mean, it's not even goofiness. It's serious in what it's doing, but it's letting the situations be fun with, you know, without like being, not like Wormhole Extreme goofy.
And then, like, you know, I got to thinking, like, what happens if they don't pass? Like, they obviously know about the Stargate program. I mean, they had sort of some sort of secrecy. Do they actually end up working for the faculty in some way? They just don't do combat mission, or they just don't go out.
Or just, you know, you've got a top secret clearance, so you know you don't say a damn thing to anyone.
You know, that's true.
They wouldn't be there if they couldn't be trusted.
Yeah, that's true. That's interesting. Very interesting part of the universe that, you know, it just makes you go off a different tangent and thinking about all the possibilities. And I'm sure that we'll see more as we, you know, go through the series. But all in all, good times. And we talk about a Major Mansfield. Have we been introduced to him before?
I don't think so. I mean, Mansfield sounds familiar, but it's also, you know, kind of like Kowalski. It's one of those names you see just about every army movie at some point.
That's true. Okay, yeah, no, there's no link URL on the wiki to Major Mansfield, so I don't think we're gonna know anything about it. Okay, sounds good. Did you have a favorite quote?
But before I get to that, I want to point out something that I found hilarious.
Okay.
There was a Star Trek The Next Generation episode called Lower Decks.
Oh, that's right.
Is not the cartoon series Lower Decks, which is absolutely brilliant. If you're a Star Trek fan, you need to watch that show.
I have Paramount Plus. I'll get to it all eventually.
It's hilarious. It's so good. It's so good. But the TNG episode Lower Decks, which was all about four ensigns who were trying to get promotions, and it was, you know, instead of focusing on the bridge crew, it was, you know, let's just spend a day in the life of these guys who are trying to become bridge crew or whatever. Written by Ron Wilkerson, who is the same person who wrote this episode.
Oh God, I knew about that. Like, it's similar to the same thing. I didn't know it was written by the same person.
Oh, yep.
Come on, man. Come on, really, really. I mean, but you know what? That's fine. The episode was fine. I actually had to read the synopsis of Lower Decks, and then I got really bored, and then just saw, okay, someone died, and then three people, they do good, and one's promoted. Yeah. Okay, cool. But yeah, basically similar, just recruits trying to, you know, make it into the world.
Yeah, and I spent the whole episode looking at Grace Park, who was Satterfield, going, "I know her."
I was like, "Booba!" Or Athena, because like, or basically number eight.
But she's, you know, quite a bit younger in this, so it's like she's still kind of got the baby fat in her
she does like, yeah, she loses, and she looks great. I mean, she looked great there, but it was just,
oh yeah, she
looked very young and cute thing. Like young and cute, but just good times. And
so my favorite quote is from O'Neill. Of course, O'Neill was this was peak O'Neill in this whole episode. You know, he was obviously playing the part of, you know, just being an absolute hard-ass dickweed. But there were times when it was just, you know, him and Sam, and he was still doing it. It's like, all right, you could tone it back a little bit, Jack.
He was like, and like the whole time, Carl was like, "I'm going away. Go ahead.
Yeah, I love that. They were eating jello. He was eating red jello. She was eating blue. I don't know if that means anything. I just noticed it for some reason.
That's funny.
But yeah, I love how she ends the conversation by taking a mouthful of jello and just kind of pointing and leaving. It's like, you're being a jerk. I'm going away. But my favorite quote is O'Neill, and he's talking to Lieutenant Leaderboy, and he says, "There's such a thing as overthinking a situation, Lieutenant. When you're dealing with what we deal with, you've got to think on your feet and think fast. These and other cliches will be available for all of you for one more day of training with me. After that, you'll either be assigned to an SG team or not. Dismissed."
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's very classic O'Neill. Yeah, that's good times. But really, I don't think there's really anything else we could say about this episode.
No, it's not a terribly deep episode. I liked that Haley was in on it at the end. Mm-hmm. I liked that, you know, like I said, I liked that they didn't try to fool us with the training scenario.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, I have seen what they, you know, in the goofs section on IMDb, they were like, you know, anyone trained to use a weapon is going to know when they've been handed something full of blanks. That's kind of true, but it was also, you know, a high stress situation. So they you didn't see them checking their magazines or anything. So and the only one who actually fired their real weapon was Haley, and she may have known about it by that point.
Yeah, we don't know yet. So yeah, there you go. Ha ha. You've been disproven. Get over it.
So and also I saw something that said, you know, semi-automatic weapons have to be specially adapted to fire blanks. Bullshit. I have one at work. Mm-hmm. I have a fake 45 at work that fires blanks, and it's a semi-auto and it works just fine. But mm-hmm. you know, whatever. But yeah, this was fun, enjoyable, lighthearted. There was nothing in it that made you go, oh, come on. And everybody was, you know, happily ever after at the end, which we don't get all that often in SG-1. So I enjoyed it.
Yes, absolutely. I enjoyed it as well. I would like to know more about the training program with SG-1, mm-hmm. with the Stargate Command, please. The Stargate program, you know, make a comic about it. I'd read it, you know, graphic novel. It'll be fun.
So before we go away, I would like to do something that I am very, very tardy in doing. And I'm, you know, coming back, getting back into the swing of podcasting and stuff. There's something I've always been supposed to do and have been terribly reticent about it. And that is to thank our patrons, because, you know, all of you know, there's been a huge gap thanks to COVID, thanks to other things that happened in you know, in real life. And while some people have gone away, and I absolutely do not blame anyone for it.
That's cool.
Because I wasn't doing shit.
It happens. You know, people move on. You know, you get new people. You lose some people. Some people stay. It's all good.
Yeah. But there are some who have stuck with us for the duration. And I love you guys so much. And I want to thank Cogs and Andy and M. Foppen and Mary and Matt and Shane and Joe. You guys are saints. Thank you so much. And I'm going to try my best to thank the patrons every time we do a show.
Yes.
Because you guys, you know, it doesn't, you know, it may not feel like you're doing much, but I'm, you can hear me now because of what you've done, you know, because I can fix things when they break. I can get new components. I can get a headphone amplifier, you know, or replace my motherboard or replace my processor. Y'all are so wonderful. And I can't thank you enough. And those of you that stuck with me through the dark times, through the quiet times, I don't have enough thank yous to say thank you. Mm-hmm. But thank you.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, shout out to, like, you know, the people on the Twitter that are liking, retweeting our stuff. We really appreciate it. You guys are awesome. Also, shout out to Tom Eddy, Teddy Abridged on Twitter. He was like, depressing, blah, blah, blah. It's great to have you and wrote back. I did enjoy a longer form episode with Tangent. And I think he also mentioned something along the lines of, I swear, someone said something about our thingy, saying they laughed at the spinning when I talked about spinning about.
Oh yes,
in Boba Fett.
You're talking about Boba Fett, yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, we did drift a bit on the last episode, didn't we?
If you want to go on tangents, we can do that. But at the same time, like, I don't want to take too long because, like, this is normally like my dinner time or a little bit after my dinner time, so I'm kind of hungry. So if I had a snack, but yeah.
But we were also in the you know, hey, we haven't done this in almost a year. So.
It's been so long. It's already March. Oh my god.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
March, and this is what I hate about this time of year, March and April. There are no federal holidays. So I don't, you know, I want my federal holiday, goddammit.
my birthday's in April. Does that count?
That's cool, but that's not a federal holiday. I want paid leave. I have leave, but I want free leave. I want holiday. I'm greedy, so whatever. But yeah, March and April. But yeah, we're doing this, guys. And, you know, next episode will be 48 hours. No idea what that's about, but I'm pretty sure it has nothing to do with Jack. Well, it has something to do with Jack Bauer, hopefully.
I kind of don't.
But other than that, thank you, Rick. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, and thank you for a wonderful synopsis of a very busy show, and wonderful.
Thank you. Okay, well, and thank you again, listeners. We'll see you again, and close the iris.
Open the Iris is a production of the Infinite Potato Alliance. If you'd like to reach us, send an email to the7thchevron@gmail.com. That's THE7THCHEVRON, or on Twitter at Open the Iris. Our theme is by Stephen Cogswell, and you can find more of his music at stephencogswell.bandcamp.com, and our logo is by Brandon Ushio of the Fandom Podcast.